a report. It's going to be about 50 to 70 pages, and it's the question is, describe and analyze changes and trends in crime and law enforcement in Hillsboro, Oregon from 1980 to 2005. And so it's just going to be like a big compilation of...
Okay. I've only worked for Hillsboro probably since 97.
Oh, okay.
I did work as a police officer in Los Angeles between 1990 and 97. Actually, I'm originally from Detroit, Michigan.
Yeah.
And my dad is a retired policeman from Detroit. So hopefully I'll have enough information to provide for you for your project and give you a good perspective on things.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. So the way we're supposed to start out is like so. The following interview was conducted on behalf of the oral history program of the Century High School. The interview is Brew Baena and Clint Johnston. The interviewer is the interview took place at the Counseling Center on May 19, 2005. So one of our questions is, how long have you been working for the Hillsboro Police Department?
Since 1997.
Okay. And so what are some trends you've noticed over your span of your career, like in criminal activity?
Well, I think specifically with Hillsboro, I think there is, Hillsboro, Washington County, has an interesting dynamic because there are several smaller cities. Most of my law enforcement experience is from big city stuff. But when you come to a smaller market, Washington County, the big trend that I've seen since I've been here is a lot of cooperation between similar size agencies. We have a very good cooperative effort with Beaverton Police Department, Tiger, Tualatin, Washington County Sheriff's Office, Washington County District Attorney's Office, and that really drives a lot of the successful things that happen in law enforcement in Washington County is a collaborative effort between all the agencies, up to including schools that we have. We're really involved with the Hillsboro School District, as you may know, with the School Resource Officer Program. With our Department of Human Services, Child Protection Services, we have a lot of interaction with that agency. And the biggest trend, and something that I think will be a main focus for years to come, is a cooperative effort between all the agencies, both law enforcement and public sector service agencies within the general county area.
So, like, you've worked in Hillsboro from 1997.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, from 1997 to 2005, did you notice any changes?
The biggest thing was a lot of growth.
Okay.
I mean, even before I got here in the early 90s, this was still a town of 35,000 people. And now we're looking somewhere in the area of 75,000 to 80,000 people. And that's a huge expansion of growth. When you talk about how things were done in the early 90s here as opposed to how they've been done now. I can speak a lot of what has happened since 97 with the changes, and it's just a lot of growing pains. Every part of Hillsboro and Washington County kind of experienced some growing pains, whether it's the school district, the police department, court system, and that's taken some getting used to. I think what has helped a lot with that is the cooperative effort between all these agencies who are also going through the same kind of growing problems, like Beaverton and unincorporated areas of Washington County. With the amount of growth that's happened, we really need to cooperate and communicate with each other to accommodate that kind of growth and change since 97.
So what have you enjoyed most in Hillsboro Police Department work?
I think my assignment, I've been a detective since 1998. It's a very challenging job. I get a lot of personal satisfaction with that. I enjoy the working relationships I have with these agencies, with the district attorney's office, with outside agencies, the Beaverton, Washington County Sheriff's Office, that kind of thing. I love the ability in my particular job to see things through their completion. When I'm assigned a case, it's my job to answer the questions, to figure it out. There's no loose ends afterwards, and when you have a lot of those that you complete, there's a lot of job satisfaction being able to see very complicated matter all the way through to the end. Whereas if you're working in different areas of law enforcement, that may not necessarily be the case. If you're working patrol, and your primary focus is first response and answering calls for service and those kinds of things, you don't necessarily see the end result of some of your initial work. And detectives, that's definitely part of your job description.
So what kind of relationship do you have with the district attorneys and some of the other
That's something that is unique, at least from my perspective, working in a smaller market such as Washington County as opposed to Detroit or Los Angeles, is that you really didn't know people by their first name in the district attorney's office or some of your partner agencies. And here, because of our size, we're able to enjoy that. I have a great working relationship with a dozen or so specific district attorneys who work in our office there. And it makes for a much smoother job when you're able to call people that you know and get things accomplished through court or meeting witnesses or getting trial preparation done. Just the ability that we're small enough that we know each other, I think that makes our job a whole lot easier.
So back to the question about your work, like when you came here, what brought you here to Hillsboro?
I was fortunate enough to marry an Oregonian. And you guys are gonna get older enough where you find out where you're gonna that's where you're gonna go. So yeah, and I loved Oregon. No, when my wife and I were dating, I'd come up here a couple of times when we were living in LA, and absolutely loved it up here. I mean, it's just no place I ever lived before. It's nothing like Detroit. It's nothing like Los Angeles, and absolutely loved it here. And so far they treated me pretty good, so I don't have any complaints.
So what area of Hillsboro, you know, give you the most trouble? Like, have you ever gone out cases or something?
Good question, but I don't know if there's any particular area that gives us a lot of problems. It all depends on what kind of problems you are. We have an area of downtown around like 10th and Walnut, 10th and Maple, that has a high call for service, where the residents there call the police a lot for a lot of different issues. Other areas of Hillsboro, we don't get a very high call for service. They're more quiet, little pockets of town here and there. But as far as a dangerous area in Hillsboro, I don't know specifically if we have one. They're just different areas that require more police presence than others.
So police presence, like in drugs, would you say, or just burglary or theft or murder? I don't know, would you associate any area with it?
Not really, no. I mean, we have, like I said, around the older established parts of Hillsboro. I mean, when you talk about Hillsboro, you can't escape the growth factor when you talk about, you know, what is Hillsboro? Where is Hillsboro? And to someone who's been here in the 80s, well, Hillsboro only goes up to Brookwood to those people. Other people who have been here think of Hillsboro going all the way out to 185th, where Tannisbourne is, and that's what they think of Hillsboro. So it's the older, more established areas that have been here the longest, that are in the city, that probably have the most need for calls and service. People have lived there the longest. It's the most established areas of Hillsboro. Some of the newer areas, we don't get a lot of calls for service. They're not really established places where people like to hang out, or businesses aren't there established as much. So when you talk about, you know, like drug activity, you're going to find that on 10th and Maple, 10th and Walnut. People selling dope around there. Occasionally you get prostitution activity around there. But it's really because that's what people have been around that place the longest. You won't get that so much, you know, out at Evergreen and 25th, because there's not a whole lot out there, you know. So people are really comfortable where they're used to hanging around. And because of the way Hillsboro is grown, you'll have certain areas that have been here the longest, and those areas seem to attract the trouble.
So do you think it's the new people that are coming in, the population growth, did that have a big factor on the areas?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think some problem areas, like a good example would be our the apartment complex out at Quitama Crossing. That came in, a brand new apartment complex, looked beautiful, but it was a nightmare. We had so many problems in that apartment complex when it first opened because the management company wasn't screening people right or whatever, but that it felt to us from the police department that you pretty much had to have a criminal record in order to get an apartment there, because every time you went there was always trouble. Getting cars broken into, fights all the time, all that kind of stuff. And this is a brand new complex. So not necessarily. That's an example of an area that really got off on the bad a bad foot, so to speak. But that certainly isn't indicative of all the new area growth. So all the new complexes didn't experience those kinds of things like Watama Crossing did. We still, what we call the core area of Hillsborough, that area right around 10th, Walnut, Maple, Cedar, Shute Park area, where it's longtime area of downtown Hillsborough, what people think of downtown Hillsborough, is where we have probably the most activities, troubles, that kind of stuff. And it's, I wouldn't say it's from new people coming in, because like I said, it's those are the ones that have been here the longest. That area has been established the longest, and it's just, that's where people go.
And so those areas, like you talked about, like 10th and Maple, and then the Shute Park, and like every specific area, you know, have you noticed like they've gone from bad to good or good to bad?
Not necessarily. It's pretty consistent as far as that kind of goes. We have seen some improvement when certain citizens get involved with problem apartment complexes. One of them, I know we call it Sunset Gardens now, but it used to be called something else. Some of the older timer guys will know what it used to be called, but that one was a terrible complex. It's been around for years and years and years, and they went in, they repainted, they restructured the way they had tenants come in, and that made a huge difference on that particular. Birch Park was the name of it. Birch Park Apartments. Terrible place. Always fights, always problems there, just about any night of the week. Until the property owners there kind of took a proactive approach and said, well, what are we doing wrong here? Why do we have so many problems at our apartment? And they did a lot to change that. They gave it a new name. They gave it a new paint job, literally. And it seems the problems there aren't the same as they used to be.
The issue with meth in Hillsborough has been in the media a lot. Do you think that it's really that big of a deal that the media is making out to be, or is it really just something new?
It's worse than what the media says it is. It's terrible. For those of you not familiar with methamphetamine, what it does to your body, it's, you might as well just drink drain cleaner. It literally is poison that you put into your body. It's the worst thing in law enforcement that I've probably ever seen. I would take heroin addicts or cocaine addicts any day over methamphetamine users. That stuff is truly evil. What the media has put out is pretty much just the tip of the iceberg. Just about all of our crimes that are committed in Washington County have something to do with meth, somehow related to just about, I want to say, 80 to 90% of our stuff that we deal with. There's some meth component in that, whether it's forgery, bad checks, thefts, assaults, breaking into cars, homicides, whatever. There's some part of that that has meth involved, and it's terrible. And it's only going to get worse before it gets any better.
Do you think there's, DARE programs or anything that'll educate the public on meth? Because I know the DARE programs, they focus mainly on, marijuana and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think there is a recognition now that meth needs to be addressed. I think what you see in the media recently is some reflection of that, of trying to educate people about what meth is, what meth does, how bad it really is. And I think that is a way to at least start educating people through DARE or other programs like that to get people aware of what meth really does to people. I mean, it's truly evil stuff.
So are you okay with the media coverage? Do you think it's a positive thing? Has it reduced the activity?
It absolutely hasn't reduced the activity, but I think it opens people's eyes to understand what meth really is. I think a lot of people out there think, you know, drug use is a personal choice and people can choose what they want to put in their own bodies. Why should we make it illegal? That kind of thing. I think when they see what the effects of those things are, what it does to a person, what it does to their family, what it does to their neighborhoods, I think they understand why certain things are made illegal. I don't think there's any clinical, medical, positive use that you can use meth for. Absolutely not. And I think the more people are aware of that through the media, there's been some recent coverage, I think they'll understand why things are so bad with this stuff. Education is the key to understanding it, but it's not going to make the problem go away. Good question. They've been trying to figure that out since the 60s.
So, about the Max line, I think it was, it came here around when you came here to the Hillsborough Police Department, I think it was 97 or 98. And so, it stretches all the way from, where is it? Edge of
Gresham.
Is it Gresham? Gresham until Forest Grove. And so, I'm sure that covers a lot of area from Hillsborough. Has that, like, I guess I don't know how you can compare it from before, but has that had any effect on any criminal activity?
I don't think so. I think there was, initially there was concern that, oh, it's going to be a whole lot easier for people just to come to and from Portland, from Gresham into Hillsborough. We're going to have Portland criminals coming and going. We're going to have Gresham. And that not necessarily hasn't come to pass. I don't think it was. I think some people were concerned about that, that the ease of use would bring criminal elements into Hillsborough. We weren't as easily accessible before, and vice versa. I thought some people thought that it was going to be a way for bad folks to get around easier, but I don't think that's really happened.
Over the past couple of years, what have you? I mean, you said that meth is on the rise, and have you? What do you think has been declining or decreasing over the past couple of years?
I haven't seen a whole lot of. Heroin. Heroin's been on a downslide for a long time. Cocaine, you don't see a whole lot of that in Hillsborough. You see a lot of marijuana because that's everywhere. But the reason meth is so prevalent is that it's cheap and it's easy. I mean, it's you can make it in your garage. Not very safely because the people who cook that stuff end up usually either dying from the poison that gets in their system, their hair and teeth will fall out. It's terrible stuff, but it's cheap and it's easy to make and it's everywhere. So I don't know if there's actually been a decline of anything else. I think it's just meth has been steadily increasing because it's everywhere. People can make it in a car pretty much and they can sell it very cheaply and it's real easy.
So as an undercover, would you say a cop or an undercover detective? Have you ever gone undercover?
I have. Not so much a whole lot in Hillsborough. I did in Los Angeles quite a bit, but not a whole lot here in Hillsborough. A few times in a couple certain operations we've gone in undercover capacity, but not a whole lot.
So those operations, are they drug or just things of kind?
Yeah, crime suppression stuff. Surveillance. We'll do a lot of surveillance on suspects on ongoing cases, those kinds of things. Sometimes we do have members of our department that work a lot with drugs, the undercover work in drugs, and it does happen. I just don't do a lot of that.
What non-drug based criminal activity have you noticed, like DUI or domestic violence? What's the most prevalent other than drugs in Hillsborough?
Probably the biggest thing, and it really does tie in with methamphetamine, is forgery, mail theft, those kinds of things. And they're driven. You show me a forgerer, and I'll show you a meth user. I mean, they're the same people. They're the ones stealing mail, stealing checks, washing checks, making stuff on computers to try and make it look like real checks. And those are all meth users, I mean, without question. When you see forgery, you'll see meth users. And that's really the big scourge. We do have a domestic violence problem, but we've got probably more resources for domestic violence than probably any other crime problem that we have in the city of Hillsborough. We have a good working relationship with the Domestic Violence Resource Center. I think I saw on your list one of the people there from the DVRC. We have a detective who does nothing but review domestic violence cases as part of his job. They have a domestic violence team at the district attorney's office that specializes in domestic violence. There's a lot of resources, and rightly so, for domestic violence issues. But other than that, we don't really have a huge like crime problem. We do have some limited gang activity. I see it through a different kind of lens than when I think of gangs, I think of the ones I've worked with down in Los Angeles, and the ones I see here, I don't see them as nearly as sophisticated or an organized criminal enterprise like they were in Los Angeles. Here we've got kids who want to wear sports jerseys with numbers on it, get tattoos. I mean, there's a few bad ones out there, but for most part, they're not involved in organized criminal activity to the extent that they were that I've been used to or I've noticed in my career. But we do have problems with graffiti in Hillsboro, people who want to be in gangs and want to make, you know, a big deal out of, you know, who I'm with, 13th Street or 12th Street or any of that kind of stuff. And they want to live that lifestyle as a gangster, but not so much a huge gang problem. We do have one, but it's something that is getting a lot of attention through our department. But as far as, you know, a huge, what our big crime problem is Hillsboro, I think that would be about it. Meth use, forgery, theft, limited gang activity with graffiti and theft and that kind of stuff. Probably sums it up.
And so I just noticed when you were talking about the gangs, comparing them from where you were in LA mm-hmm. to now in Hillsboro, you kind of thought it was just like a joke, like you didn't take it very seriously, like they're not very serious about it.
No.
Yeah, and so I'm curious, where did like most of these gangs come from? Because there's a ton of population upsurge, and so where would you say they came mostly from, California? Or?
I think the idea came from Southern California. I don't think a lot of the ones who have the tattoos have ever set foot outside of the state of Oregon, but through mass media and all kinds of things, or they know a cousin or a brother who has served time in this thing, and it's something that they just gravitate to. There's a certain amount of people that want that, want to live that lifestyle, want to be a gangster, want to be whatever. And they think that's an alluring image, and they may have never left Forest Grove in their entire life, but they've got 12th Street tattoos, and they say locos on the. I mean, they want to be a badass, but they've never been anywhere. But that's just who they want to be. So I think a lot of it comes from that.
So, different topic. What would you change about your daily schedule, or what is your daily schedule consist of usually?
Ooh, you know, that's part of the fun of being a detective. I don't really have a daily schedule. Generally, I work Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. That's basically just to be available to a lot of the outside agencies we deal with, either through court, through Child Protective Services, agencies that we deal with on a regular basis that we'll deal with. Plus, it's when people are home or at work that we can go and talk to and interview and those kinds of things. Detectives working at 3 in the morning ain't going to get a lot of people to answer the door when they go out and want to interview them on a crime. So generally, we work during the day for that. I don't think there's a whole lot I would change about that. I think you know, people who work in detectives are there for a particular reason. And part of that is what kind of work that you do, and I don't think I change a whole lot out of my daily schedule. Sometimes I'd like to be at work longer because I got, you know, a ton of stuff to do on a particular day. This week is one of them. I really don't need to go home. I got, you know, 5 days of work and 3 days to do it, so try and stretch them out as much as I can sometimes, but I don't think there's a whole lot of a change out of my schedule.
With the crime in Hillsboro, would you say that there's any particular race involved more? I mean, I know there's a large number of Hispanics mm-hmm. and Asians in Hillsboro, but with that, do you think with the larger numbers comes more criminal activity, or is that pretty much spread out throughout the...
I don't think so. For many years, but I still do this a bit, our child and adult sex crimes. My suspects were usually white males in those, generally speaking. I've handled four out of the last five homicides in Hillsboro. Two of the suspects, let's see, first one was a white guy, second one was an Hispanic guy, third one was a white guy, and this fourth one we're still working on. The five, he was a male Asian, so there's no ethnic group that really has a label as our child molesters are always so-and-sos, or our car thieves are always so-and-so. They don't really have that. Hillsboro is predominantly white, so we have most of our criminals are white. Most of our people involved with meth that we'll see male and female whites. We do have an Hispanic population that's involved with drug sales and things like that. Absolutely we do. A lot of our gang activity is probably a little bit more popular in the Hispanic community than it is white community. We don't have a lot of white gangsters out there that get themselves all tattooed up with some of the gangs. A lot of the Hillsborough ones associate themselves with the historic Hispanic gangs from Los Angeles. They use the same names of those. There's not a lot of white gangs that we have here in Hillsborough, so a lot of the juvenile gang activity will be male Hispanic, generally speaking. Car thieves come in every shade, dope users come in every shade, so no, not really. DUIs come in every color, so not really.
All right, you mentioned juveniles. Do you think that there's been an increase or a decrease in the past couple of years in juvenile criminal activity?
Not so much. We've had a couple of ones. I mean, even this year, a couple of high-profile ones with some Glencoe High School students shooting up a house. But that's not indicative of a trend of more juvenile activity. You'll get a few cases like that that'll make a big splash in the media. And, oh, look at all these kids are running amok. No, not really. Mostly it's still adults. A lot of the stuff like graffiti, that kind of stuff, you'll find just by the nature of that, those are going to be juveniles. Not going to be a whole lot of adults out there spray painting, you know, a bunch of numbers on a wall. Generally not. So no, not really. Not really. It's a level kind of thing. We'll get a few spikes here and there in some high profile cases, but generally not.
You mentioned about well, we asked a question about how what kind of races commit what kind of crimes. So not trying to stereotype, but in the police department, in law enforcement generally, would you say they were diverse as well? Like the people that work in law enforcement as well?
I would say so. Hillsborough Police is a very progressive department. Our chief is really big on having a very diverse workforce as far as the people that he has hired since I have been there. Most of the people we hire at Hillsborough Police have been a police officer someplace else. We very rarely get a brand new person that's never been an officer before to work at Hillsborough Police. We've had a few, but those are the exceptions. Pretty much our whole Hillsborough Police Detective Unit have been police officers somewhere else and have come to work for Hillsborough. And that in and of itself brings a lot of diverse views on different police departments in there. As far as race goes, probably our biggest minority population within the police department would be Hispanic officers, Spanish-speaking officers, because the chief really wants to mirror the community in so much as that we do have, I wouldn't say a large Hispanic population, but the one that's predominant. I mean, we have a lot of, we have enough that we need services through the police department that will be able to serve the Hispanic community. The chief is aware of that. So that's a big thing with him, is that we have as many Spanish speakers as we can get, Hispanic officers that we can get to service. And because we don't have that many minorities in Hillsborough other than Hispanic, so I think that's the biggest thing we have in our department is to address our Hispanic community.
Yeah, we've been talking a lot about crime and what are some changes in law enforcement and punishments for crime over the past couple of years?
I think the biggest one in the state of Oregon has been Measure 11. I think, before then, it really was up to the judge's whim on that particular day what he thought was a good idea at the time. And that level of ambiguity really did a disservice to the criminal justice system. Not to the fact that we can't trust our judges, but by the fact that we didn't have consistency. And I think when you deal with criminal justice system and punishment in general, consistency is huge. People want to know if you rob somebody on the street, that equals a certain amount of time in prison. And there needs to be a consistent way of handling punishment through court. And it's a fairness issue. I mean, does this person get a year and a half and this person gets 11? Well, why? They have the same kind of criminal history, but it depends on what judge saw them on what day kind of thing. And a lot of fairness wasn't applied and consistency wasn't applied. What Measure 11 did in the state of Oregon was apply a consistent schedule of what's going to happen if you do X equals Y. This is what's going to happen. And the judges weren't able to deviate what we call a downward departure. And you'll hear that from DAs or judges. They can request a downward departure outside of Measure 11. They can always request an upward departure outside of the time frame of Measure 11. But that is it's a foundation of fairness through the criminal justice system in the state of Oregon that really makes a difference in how people view, well, what's going to happen if this person's arrested and convicted of rape or robbery or murder or whatever the Measure 11 offense is going to be. And I think it's the best thing since sliced bread myself. I think there's no questions, there's no mystery, there's no ambiguity. This is what happens if you get convicted of this crime. And it's no mystery. There's no secrets. There's no that kind of thing. So I think that, and that's a good thing.
So what do you think prompted Measure 11 to pass?
I think a lot of citizens in Oregon didn't like the fact that a judge could determine on themselves. The child molester gets 18 months in jail for that. People didn't think that that was strong enough, I think. That the judges were not being consistent with the crime equaling punishment. And I think people saw that enough to say, no, enough. We want fairness. We want consistency. We want a real in-stone kind of thing that says this is what's going to happen. We don't like the fact that a particular judge can do whatever they want. Someone can make convicted of a serious felony of a crime against another person, and the judge can give them probation if he wanted to, and we're not okay with that. We think certain crimes should equal certain amounts of things. So it was put on the ballot, and people just love the idea. And I know there's been some challenges in the last couple of years since 97 of people who says, no, we want to let the judge have some discretion. We want different factors to be involved. And the voters have soundly defeated those things. They don't want that. People of Oregon don't want that. There's some that do. Usually those are parents of people that are in jail who want to get people out. But citizens who don't have people in prison, relatives in prison, like the idea of consistency and fairness in court sentencing. I think that's why it's so popular.
How much effect do you think Measure 11 has had on Hillsborough? Like, has it reduced crime, or has it impacted gang members or any kind of violence to go down?
You hear that a lot from suspects. Is this going to be a Measure 11 thing? That everyone knows what that is. And is it a deterrent? I don't know. I think they know that that's a serious issue when they're charged with a Measure 11 crime, and they know it's the real deal. And I think a lot of people think about that and say, Measure 11, I ain't getting involved with that kind of thing. And I think that does have a deterrent factor on that, because it's no mystery, it's no secret. There is a level of consistency that they know what's going to happen to them if they're convicted of these things. And does that have an effect on what they choose to do? I think it could.
What are some, in law enforcement, what are some strategies or techniques that police officers have been using that have changed from earlier techniques? Like some changes in tools or weapons that they use to take down criminals?
There's been a huge thing. When I started law enforcement in 1990, the most sophisticated piece of equipment I had in my police car was a very old-fashioned, what they call MDT, to run people for warrants, to run license plates, to receive your call for service. It shows up on a very small computer screen. And nowadays, the ones they have in their cars, holy cow. I mean, it's like literally just a laptop they have in there. They can do reports. They can do things much more efficiently. I think the use of high technology stuff has greatly increased the efficiency in how we do our job with tools. As far as weapons go, there's a huge trend to explore what we call less than lethal force options. When I started in 1990, I got a metal pipe, also known as a baton, in Los Angeles. I got a pistol. I got some tear gas, and that was about it. They gave us some tasers, some very old-fashioned by nowadays standards, some tasers to subdue people, but they were big and bulky, and no one really carried them. You usually just hit people with your pipe or your baton, and that's what it was, or you shot them, pretty much. Now, there's so many other use of force tools that are available that you don't have to just pull your gun and shoot somebody like you did in the old days. One of the biggest things that I found was OC spray, oleo resin capsis gun, pepper spray. That stuff, when that came around, amazing. The old mace that when I got started, was extremely non-user friendly. That stuff would get everywhere. I mean, when you sprayed somebody, no one ever used that stuff because it just either didn't work or it fumigated the whole area and everyone got stuff in their eyes. With OC spray or pepper spray, it was much more user-friendly. The people didn't suffer effects like they did with tear gas. It wasn't nearly as destructive to a person's system as tear gas is. Pepper spray hurts like a mother. Don't ever get sprayed with that stuff if you don't have to. I've been sprayed with it enough in training and things like that. It's bad news. It got bad news written all over it. You don't want that. It makes you, if it works well, it makes you stop whatever you're doing. And it's great. You don't have to fight with nearly as many people. They're not injured. Suspects aren't injured like they were with tear gas. It's very temporary, but it's very incapacitating for a very short amount of time. And that's exactly the tool that police need. Something that doesn't cause people bodily harm, stops them from doing what they're doing, usually fighting us or fighting somebody else, and they don't get hurt from it. I mean, I've seen it many, many times in the field, and OC spray is great. Nobody gets hurt, really. I mean, that hurts, and they're not happy for about 20 minutes because it really is bad news. But after it wears off, everyone's fine. They don't get cuts and bruises. Officers don't get hurt. Victims don't get hurt. It's great. And that's something that has been within the last 15 years that's been a dramatic use of force tool. Another thing is the development of new tasers that are much more user-friendly than the old bulky ones that were given to us a long time ago. Don't ever get shot with a taser if you don't have to. I've been shot with a taser in training, and it wasn't nice. It really hurts. I didn't care for that at all. So if someone says, as a taser, stop what you're doing. Avoid being shot by a taser. And that's another thing. It really hurts. It incapacitates someone very quickly and really puts them out. And that's a great tool that we use for something that's a little higher up on the use of force scale than, say, maybe just spraying someone with some pepper spray. Taser is something that is more available now, so we don't shoot as many people. I think when you look at some of the situations where people are getting tased now, 20 years ago they were getting shot. And now we don't do that anymore. We'd rather use these other tools that are available, and law enforcement is always looking for better ways to subdue and control combative people without having to kill them. And the biggest things have been better tasers and better chemical sprays to avoid people getting hurt. It's been a huge trend. Great question.
And also, an officer Hess, I don't know if you're familiar with him, he comes to our school a lot. He was mentioning how about technology, how it's actually slowed, I don't know how to say it, but it's slowed response time, of police officers to a crime scene. Would you agree or disagree?
No, I would disagree with that, because I remember in 1990, how basic our technology tools were. Even so, from my dad's experience, my dad started the job in 1960. He didn't even have a radio. He had a Smith & Wesson revolver, which hardly anyone carries anymore revolvers. They always carry automatics. A nightstick, and that was it. They had no radio. You had to get stuff from a call box and things like that. Efficiency was nowhere near as what it was today. Didn't have cell phones, didn't have pagers, didn't have all these things that we kind of take for granted nowadays. So the efficiency by using technology, I would disagree with that officer as far as slowing things down, because what helps in law enforcement is communication and knowledge. And if what those tools from technology do is give us both of those things, the ability to communicate with other officers in the field very quickly and the ability to get information about either calls for service or anything like that in a, you know, very quick manner. And those are our friends as far as police work. Those two things are our friends, and technology does that. And they do it better now than they've ever done.
What about medals or awards? Have you or your department received any special awards or medals over the past couple of years?
I have. I received. I don't even know what they call it. I don't wear it a lot, but it was I think a meritorious service commendation. Something like, I had a case, two homicides that I handled in 2002. Where the suspects were arrested. I was the lead detective on both those cases, and we got both of those murders quite quickly, and the department saw fit to give me a nice little pin and say, hey, great job catching murders and things like that, but I don't even know what it's called. Our chief is really big on acknowledging good stuff within our department. Recently, our department went through a national accreditation program. That was a very strenuous examination by a certifying body that does this. That's their thing, is they go around to agencies and certify them or accredit them based on their work practices, policies, procedures, all those kinds of things. And the accreditation process for the City of Hillsborough Police took a couple of years. A few tweaks and changes were made on some things, and the chief was very proud of that fact, that our agency was able to be accredited by this board, and we're one of the few agencies in the state that has this national accreditation. Washington County Sheriff's Office now has it, Beaverton has it, I know Hillsborough has it, maybe a couple others do, not many. And I know the chief and a lot of the administration staff worked really hard to make that happen for our agency, to have some national accreditation for what we do at Hillsborough.
So, congratulations, by the way, for receiving those awards.
And, oh, thank you.
And also, I regret I haven't called you if you could bring them. So, maybe next week, we're going to interview a different detective mm-hmm. at the department. So, maybe next week we can come by and get a copy of those awards.
Oh, boy, I don't even know if I have them, because they give you a little ribbon if you wear it. You'll see officers in uniform. They'll have colored pins that are about the size of, about the size of, little metal pins, and those are service commendations. And officers will, and there'll be different colors and things like that. That's what those are. To be honest, I don't even know where I, because I don't wear a uniform very often, and they gave me a pin, and they gave me a letter that says, okay, you've done a great job on this, and I don't know where that's at. I think, I'm sure my wife had it somewhere. I put it away in my desk, but I'll see what I can do to find that. Absolutely.
Kind of getting close to the time we got to get out of here, but is there anything else that you'd like to tell us that you think would have any significance to our project?
I don't think so. I think you've got a great list of people to talk to, with the judges, district attorney's office, people that we have for our partner agencies and domestic violence, the resource center, things like that. I think you've got a great list. If you get all the people you have on your list, I think you guys will have a great project and a great body of work with a lot of different perspectives in the criminal justice system there in Hillsborough. I think you guys will have a really good job with that.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you, guys. All right.